Now we'll have 3 minutes of questions from our student panel.
Hi, Melissa. You discussed the importance as schools of being in the public and as public forums. In my experience of 13 years at public school, I really find that this statement is completely untrue. In my school, information was kept from students, and I actually quote my principal, who said to keep a happy environment. Our newspaper had to be signed off by the principal, who frequently took out articles based on his ideas of what was right and what he thought his students could hear. What concrete evidence can you present to show that currently public schools are operating as progressive public forums?
Well, the answer is they aren't. I mean, they aren't progressive public forums. The attack on public schooling and public institutions comes from many levels, and it includes privatization. It also includes censorship. It includes people pushing to get rid of sex education, to get rid of talking about diversity. We can't talk about homosexuality. We can't talk about gender differences. We can't talk about different cultures. It's an attack on multiculturalism. And that attack on the public schools has happened since the 1980s. And so that's a part of this attack on public schools. But, you know, let's take the concern a little bit further. At least you can make a complaint in a public school system. You know, if you are in a private school, that argument doesn't register. That complaint doesn't register. And if you want to take it to larger civil rights violations, like the example that Bianca gave about Tunisia, you start saying that a school is racist, you start making an individual claim, you can't go there. You know, there's no due process within that system. And the thing about a public system is that dropout rates, suspension rates, problems, all things are accountable to the public. In a private system, you don't have to be accountable to the public. You don't have to necessarily follow ADA regulations, IDEA regulations. And in fact, the strings that they say are attached to public schooling that are creating this bureaucracy are, in fact, civil rights protections. You know, and there are numerous examples of progressive public schools. And I don't have time to go into them. I know of many in Chicago and New York City and even here. But it's all progressive public schools happen from choices made from parents and teachers as activists in community pushing for struggle. It doesn't happen with this notion of choice in the free market.
Okay. Another question. Let's continue this, though. You say that public schools actually are held accountable to the public then, and that's why they're somehow superior. If public schools are held accountable to the public, then why are they failing right now?
You have about 30 seconds.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, they're failing. Well, the biggest reason they're failing is because they're not funded enough. They're not cared for enough. They're not treated with respect. We're not cultivating what the essence of a good public system is. I mean, the things... It's like right now we have a bad situation. What do we want to do? Do we want to make it worse and move farther to the right and actually create a corporate system where the only way we can have innovation is through the market? Or do we want to actually rely on grassroots or, you know, community struggle that would push for higher standards, that would push for different curriculums, that would push for greater parent involvement, that would push to see schools serving community needs being open 24 hours? I mean, there are a lot of policies. We don't hear them because of who controls kind of our informational access and all of these attacks that have been happening since the 80s.
Thank you. Now let's move on to the third affirmative speaker, and that is State Secretary of Education Eugene Hickok.
Thank you, Gordon, and thank University of Pittsburgh and the William Pitt Union for putting on tonight's event. I guess I'd like to put some of the comments from both sides in some sort of perspective, at least from where I sit. And I've been talking about this issue long before I became Secretary of Education. As a college professor in public policy, one of my major concerns was to force my students to consider controversial issues. And as is quite obvious from this evening's discussion, this is among the more controversial. I think what I would argue is that we need to be willing, all of us, to think differently about all of our public institutions. And if you think about what's been going on in this country, other than in education, all of our public institutions the last 10 years have undergone a tremendous transformation. Look at the healthcare industry. Look at the insurance industry. Look at the banking industry. Look at religion. Look at government. Now, many of these transformations are ongoing. Many are with great, great difficulty. But the fact is, we live in an age in which all of us are rethinking the way we look at our public institutions. There is one area of public policy that has been resolute in its defense against this kind of transformation. It is education. And I would argue all of education, not just public K through 12, but all of education. I would argue that the men and women who helped to make this nation, helped create public education hundreds of years ago, could, if they could come back through time and visit education today, they'd sit there and go, you know, it looks pretty good. You've got a teacher and a student and a chalkboard. Things haven't changed much. And I would argue that's part of the problem. We have to be willing as a people to consider change. The nation is not the nation of 50 years ago or even 50 days ago. Why are we so afraid to consider change? In addition, I would argue that we need to be able to confront the facts of our dilemma in education. It is one thing to argue that public schools can do great things. I can tell you, I can take this with taking some great public schools that are doing great things all over Pennsylvania. But as our most recent speaker just pointed out, they're not progressive. To make a difference, you have to fight the system. We should be willing to think about ways to empower people in the system so that it can be more progressive. That progress is not the exception to the rule. Progress is what goes on. It has been argued that vouchers, whatever shape they might take, represent a threat to public education, that it might destroy public education. I think vouchers represent an opportunity to improve public education. And indeed, if you look at the proposal that the governor unveiled in his budget address, then we'll get more details in the coming weeks. We would propose to spend over a five-year period in total, less than 0.8% of what you, the taxpayers of Pennsylvania, will spend over 5 years on public education. We would propose to spend over 5 years about what Philadelphia spends in 4 months today. If that is a threat to public education, then surely public education's in far greater danger than we ever thought it was. For those who would argue that it is somehow the far right that is trying to manipulate individuals into false choices, all I can say is I have greater confidence in the ability of men and women to make choices than they do. Right now, there are more than 25,000 people in the city of Philadelphia seeking to participate in one of these very disturbing private school, private funded voucher programs. No one asked them. No one forced them. These are individuals who are desperately trying to find ways to improve opportunities for their children. Why is it we are so afraid to provide opportunities? Why is it we are so nervous that parents might make choices? And for those who argue that we open the door to, it's an interesting phrase, the commoditization of education, that we'll have large class size and you know, the corporations will somehow manipulate the system. The great virtue of this whole approach is you exercise the choice as parents. Do we really think that as parents, we will blindly choose schools that have too heavy a class size and poor quality teachers? I would argue the exact opposite. To put a broader set of issues on the table, I would argue that we need to be willing to make a distinction between public education and public schooling. And I would argue that we need to rethink what we mean by public education. I think we should be interested in a system of public education which is centered on the students, not centered on the system. I don't really care where a child goes to school. I care that a child gets a good education. I don't care about making sure that this district versus that district versus this system is being funded. I care that the students in those schools are getting a good education. We would argue that it is your money. This isn't about the government money being diverted to private schools. This is about your money being given back to you to make educational choices. I would argue we need to get away from the notion that somehow there is such a thing as government money. It is your money. They are your schools. They are your children. We would argue that it is very important that we introduce at least a greater possibility that you as taxpayers and as parents, you decide where your child goes to school. Not the system, not the district. We would argue that this is the ultimate form of accountability. You choose where to send your child to school, and if you're not satisfied, you remove the child from that school. That's accountability. Right now in this country, we fund schools all over the country that are failing miserably. That's not accountability. That's a recipe for continued breakdown. We would like to argue that when people see a direct connection between their investment and the quality of education that investment purchases, they take a greater interest in education. I think we can all agree on at least this one point. In this country, there has been a disconnect of the community and the parents with schools. We think vouchers, public school choice, private school choice, might strengthen that connection because you see a direct stake in your involvement. Instead, we labor in the illusion that we somehow have a free public education system. It's not free, you pay for it. $14 billion this year in Pennsylvania. That's your money, and yet you don't see the direct connection. Finally, we would argue that vouchers, school choice, is only a part of a much larger series of opportunities. Charter schools, academic standards, technology. We have never argued that vouchers or school choice is somehow a silver bullet to cure all that ails public education. We do feel it is part of what should be made available, and that as part of what is made available, we can lead a reformation of public education that we think in the end will lead to where we started years and years ago, the best system of public education in the world. Thank you.
Now 3 minutes of questions from our student panel.
Good evening, Mr. Hickok.
Good evening.
In explaining the benefits of the proposed voucher system for Pennsylvania, I found that the State Department of Education employs a benefits formula, assuming that tuition cost is around or about $4,000. And as I sit here and as I sat there last night and I looked through the tuitions of Pennsylvania, I found three counties that were under or even near $4,000. So this discrepancy seems to suggest to me that under vouchers, parents would be required to pay much more out of pocket than your analysts decided or suggested. So I have a twofold question for you. First, why did your office decide to use such a tuition figure to figure this out? And second, if parents choosing vouchers options will be required to pay upwards, as I figured out, about $600 to $1,000 to exercise their choice, how will your policy reach the families that actually need the help the most?
Okay, first of all, on the material on the webpage, one thing we wanted to do was provide an illustrative example that was easy for folks to understand. As I think is relatively obvious, this is a very complex issue. We also recognize that there is a need to provide actual calculations for the relevant school districts that might be in the pilot, for example. So you're going to see on our webpage relatively soon a way to actually calculate, given your income, given your voucher, what you would end up paying if you decided to go to that school or that school district. Secondly, obviously, we tie the pilot proposal that I think you're referring to income, and we target the first year the very lowest income. Our purpose here really is quite simple. We think that educational opportunity grants under the pilot should go first and foremost to our low-income, most needy families. But even with that, we think it's important to reiterate a point I just made, that parents recognize they have to make a commitment. They have to contribute. There are lots of very low-income families that are sacrificing a lot to send their kids to non-public schools now. So we think that, that level of commitment needs to complement any voucher that might be made available by the state.
All right. And secondly, the Pennsylvania Constitution states in Article 3, Section 15, that no money raised for the support of public schools of the Commonwealth shall be appropriated to or used for the support of any sectarian school. And in Article 3, Section 29 states, no appropriation shall be made for charitable, educational, or benevolent purpose, person, or community, nor to any denominational or sectarian institution, corporation, or association. Although I know the state does give money to students for college, this program had to have the state constitution amended. Absent a state constitutional amendment, is a voucher program constitutional?
Yeah, I think the constitutional question on a federal level has been resolved. On the state level, I'm going to argue there's room for debate. But I will say this, what we've attempted to do, not just in this proposal, but in previous proposals, is to pass the constitutional test. As has been pointed out by others in other places, we would propose to send EOG's grants to parents, not to schools. It's an educational purpose. Whether or not we would be able to prevail under the Pennsylvania Constitution is something we'd have to find out. But I guess what we're arguing is it would be an opportunity to test it in court, at least, before you tell us that it somehow should be an opportunity to deny our parents.
Thank you. Now, please welcome the final speaker for the opposition, Reverend Thomas E. Smith.
Thank you.